Welcome to the Phil Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:10 p.m. in the Pacific Summer Time. Today is May 17th. I thought we'd kick off with Bitcoin because it was another volatile weekend. And we've seen a significant drop below the $50,000 level, and it was a little steadier in here today, basically unchanged after a lot of back and forth trading during the session. But the more important point here is that we had the massive, first we had the failed upside breaks, massive reaction against the prevailing trend, period of right-hand extension, subsequent breakdown. This is a completed type 2 top formation with right-hand extension. So now we're back in the first area of potential resistance in the region, support in the region of the 200-day moving average. There is a lot of ground to make up if this trend is going to reverse, go back up on the upside. And unfortunately, what we're starting to see now is the ranks break in terms of the bullish consensus. So you have people like Jack Dorsey talking about the fact that they are underwater by $20 million on their investment. So the one thing that Square is not doing is buying more Bitcoin at this stage. Then you have people like Elon Musk saying that they're not going to accept Tesla or Bitcoin anymore for Tesla stock, or excuse me, for Tesla cars. And Tesla stock is now right in the region of its trend mean, and it's a question whether we're going to see it find support in this area. When we think about the sectors that had done particularly well in 2020, like the ARK Innovation ETF, well, it's now below the trend mean and distributing here. So it's got, again, a lot of work to do if it's going to break this downward bias overall. So there's still this extreme bullish consensus that technology is going to solve the world's problems, that, and of course it might yet. But the reality is that a lot of these unprofitable companies are assets that are looking for a real world use case. They're massively dependent on interest rates. Well, one thing we saw today was that the NASDAQ has bounced off its lows, and there is obviously still a lot of liquidity around. We're still in a very benign environment overall, so Wall Street has been steadier in here today. But the other thing, of course, is that the dollar index is really quite weak, and it was reversed an earlier advance to close on the lows, and the Bloomberg dollar index is closing below the low from last week. It's right in the region of the nether regions of this range that's been forming since January, and there is clear potential that it's going to break on the downside. So we're definitely now also starting to see some repositioning going into gold. And gold prices were up in a reasonably dynamic manner today, firming from the region of the trend mean, breaking out of this little range that formed last week. We've had now three equal-sized ranges, one above another. These are, of course, small, very small short-term ranges, all with an amplitude in the region of about $70. So we've had another one just completed, and the price is pushing up again. So we're in the process of breaking the sequence of lower rally highs. We're not quite there yet. The high from back in January was around 1874. So it seems like every day gold is taking out an old high and a former area of resistance. Of course, as long as it is putting on additional highs on a daily basis, then that is going to be confirmatory evidence that the lows are in fact in, and that we're back on the front foot in terms of the overall bullish environment. We do have to get a little bit of additional perspective, and gold has now firmed from the $1,700 area. It had got up as high as almost $2,100 area back in August. So it's a meaningful pullback. $400 on a $2,100 asset is a significant pullback. And we're definitely now starting to see increasing evidence that there is more than just simple short-term demand. We have had pops on the upside. And The more important point here is that each one of the rallies we've seen in the bear market from the peak, or I guess medium-term correction would probably be the better term, from the peak in August, were from big round numbers. So we bounced from 1900, bounced from 18, and then 1700. This is the biggest rally so far. So it is the biggest rally within a 9-month downtrend, which is a major trend in consistency. Of course, true and clear confirmatory evidence that we are actually back on a medium-term demand-dominated environment will be a higher reaction low. So we're still pushing on the upside. We have not yet seen a meaningful pullback. We will eventually see a meaningful pullback, and that will be an additional entry opportunity for anyone who's missing out on this one. But then it will also act as confirmatory evidence that we're back on the front foot, and that the strong likelihood is that gold will be pushing on to new all-time highs and extending the breakout from what has been a very lengthy period of doing not much of anything. I do think that it's also relevant. Let me just type in the dates that I want to look at other currencies. Because gold does best when it is appreciating in all currencies. So the dollar has been especially weak of late, but gold is appreciating in lots of other currencies as well. It's coming back and closing above the trend mean in the Aussie dollar. For a weak currency like the Brazilian real, then the reaction has been relatively limited and it is still steadying in the region of the trend mean. The Canadian dollar has also been a reasonably firm currency, and the rebound so far has been moderated by the strength of the loonie. The Swiss franc looks pretty similar to the US dollar, but it is clearly firming from that 1600 franc level. China is, excuse me, against the renminbi. It's also firming through the $1,200 area. When we look at it in pounds, the pound has certainly been resurgent and it is now testing the region of the trend mean. The euro has been somewhat weaker, so it's above the trend mean. When we then look at Japan, I think this is one of the more interesting charts because it's been quite weak. In fact, the yen has been weaker than the dollar has, and Japan is potentially now moving back into a recession with possibly two consecutive quarters of negative growth. And it is particularly noteworthy that we've seen some of the countries that were best able to avoid the worst effects of the pandemic now falling victim to additional lockdowns. So the Japanese market was in negative territory today and unwound much of the rebound that we had on Friday. So we may see some additional pause and consolidation here. Taiwan has also been subject to a great deal of volatility over the course of the last while, and the number of cases in Taiwan is also rising. So that is probably taking a lump out of enthusiasm towards that market, and it's a similar story in Singapore, where there have also been rising numbers of cases, but there at least the stock market was in positive territory. Of course, there is the other point that the Taiwanese market in particular has been resurgent on the upside and it was due consolidation. Singapore's market, though, has been impressive of late, but it's been largely confined to a range for what really feels like a long time. And we have to go all the way back to the period of 2007, where we can see the original peak put in, and it was briefly surmounted in 2014 and 15, and subsequently we've seen a lot of sideways action. This is equally true of a large number of other assets in Asia. And when we think about them in terms of their currency adjusted performance, this is certainly what international investors will be paying attention to. So the Indonesian market has also been basically going sideways since 2013, and it's still struggling in the region of the trend mean as well. So there is clearly scope that as the dollar breaks down And as interest flows back into commodities and precious metals, that will also create demand for emerging markets and Asia in particular, where there is a growth dividend. There is also a demographic tailwind, and they are also likely to benefit from positive trade and surpluses. And that's going to be a rather interesting argument for investing as we see deficits swell right across North America, particularly the USA. And obviously, then investors are going to start looking for somewhere else to park their cash. I created this chart in here today. It is the MSCI India versus the MSCI China. So we can see that there are periods of time when India does particularly well against China, and then there are periods mostly short-lived on the downside and also associated with issues on the global front when India underperforms China. But there's a clear upward trend. There's been a range going on since about 2015, and we can conclude from that we've had a range going on in Asia, and India's market has been doing tolerably well. And India's market is now pushing on to new high ground, but it is moving back into a position of outperformance relative to China. There's this raging argument about India or China, and about whether India and its sclerotic bureaucracy and disorderly governance really will ever have a chance of competing in a realizable fashion versus China. And of course, then we have China's efficiency in terms of infrastructure development and their business-friendly, or at least formerly business-friendly, attitude towards attracting foreign direct investment. But importantly, during all of the last 30 years, India's market has been more friendly to investors. And that's an important factor, that autocracies, they can look extremely stable from the outside, but it's rather difficult to make money there as an investor. And despite the fact that India is extremely volatile and tends to, I think, test the resolve of even the most ardent investor, and most particularly for anyone who goes there to visit, it has continued to outperform. And the Nifty index is still pushing on the upside. And it was in additional positive territory today. And the Indian rupee has also continued to steady. So, despite the fact that India is running significant deficits and has this non-performing loan issue that is getting dealt with on in I think what could best be described as a sporadic manner, the currency is reasonably stable and the stock market is reasonably firm, and that is the kind of attractive characteristic that tends to be beneficial from the perspective of international investors. And I think that that is the way that things are going, that we are seeing continued support for industrial resources, and copper prices were in positive territory in here today as well. Silver is, of course, both an industrial and a precious metal, and it was in up in dynamic form in here today, so pushing right back up towards the upper side of its range. When we think about the mining companies, well, the precious metal miners are on the front foot once more, and they've clearly broken the downward bias over the last 9 months. So the gold miners ETF was up in rather firm territory in here today, and we've seen a significant number of gold miners that have pulled back in dynamic fashion over the course of the last 8 or 9 months. They are doing exactly what they should do, and they're offering a high beta play on gold prices. This is what was anticipated from the gold miners sector during the last bull market, and they didn't achieve it because they were spending every available dollar and every and going out and borrowing additional cash to build new mines, and they've certainly learned their lessons since then. We can also think about the industrial metals, and because they are also back on the front foot, well, then industrial metal miners are continuing to push on the upside as well. So we've also seen a clear break on the upside. But of course, it's not everything is benefiting from this reflationary environment. When we think about anything that is very interest rate sensitive, well, they're having more difficult times overall. So we can think about the 10-year Treasury yield, and it was in positive territory today, so well off the low and holding this higher reaction low now around the 160 area. So there is the potential here that this range that's been forming for the last 6 to 7 weeks has unwound at least part of the oversold condition relative to the trend mean, and there's the potential that it will push further on the downside, or yields will push further up, and that may coincide with additional weakness for the US dollar. So then we can think about how are stock markets globally doing on a currency adjusted basis, because the Nasdaq has been one of the worst performers so far this year. Europe has more or less held in, or at least been steady relative to the Dow and the S&P, and Asia has somewhat underperformed, but with these lengthy ranges, then there is the scope for breakouts, and of course, ranges are explosions waiting to happen. So we can think about the Euro Stoxx index, and it's been going sideways for a very lengthy amount of time, and I will put that back into local currencies. But it is appreciating versus just about everything, and we need to look at an extraordinarily lengthy period of time to see just how long it's been since the Euro Stoxx was able to push up and out of that range. And if we look at the Europe Stoxx 600, well, then it has broken out. So there's a lot more UK stocks in the Europe Stoxx 600. So the FTSE 100 is pushing up and is holding this 7,000 level. A large number of the other constituents are Swiss stocks in the SXXP, and the SMI is right in the region of the upper side of its range and on the cusp of pushing on the upside. Then we've got the Swedish market, which is even a little overbought relative to its trend mean right now. There's clearly potential here that Europe is being viewed as a value proposition. Or there's the other side of that argument is that the sector that is most susceptible to additional downside are the mega caps, and any index that doesn't hold them is outperforming. So rather than thinking about the fact that we have opportunities in other markets, perhaps it is worth highlighting that it's the extremely large companies are holding up the performance of the Nasdaq. Now, the Amazon share, for example, was in positive territory today, and it is bouncing from the region of the trend mean. And we can think about Apple being another very large company, which is still steady in the region of the trend mean, but they've been going sideways for a long time, and they are interest rate sensitive types of investments. We can then think about Microsoft, and it's another example of a share which has been underperforming of late. So Facebook is the new outperformer in the sector, and it has now firmed from the upper side of its underlying range. And Google has been the clear outperformer of late, and it is also firming. And this is looking like a steep but a clear step sequence uptrend overall. So what we can definitely garner here is that there's been a rotation, there's still a rotation, and As long as these mega caps are at least holding the region of their trend means, then that leaves scope for everything else to continue to do well. But the underperformance of Bitcoin is certainly starting to pressure stops and creating some contagion. And that will filter through first into the altcoins. So we've seen a big downward dynamic this weekend from Ethereum, and it was pretty much unchanged in here today. This still looks like a top that has in the process of being completed, but there's a lot of institutional money was required to push these alternative assets up to extraordinary levels. And as they come back down again, there is the potential that it will create some contagion, but most particularly into the most highly valued portion of the market, which is why we continue to see the underperformance of the innovation sector. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.